You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Aaron Wyke. A passionate, design-oriented problem solver, Aaron has been involved in web design, development, and online marketing since 1998. In having helped grow three different digital agencies in the Minneapolis area, Aaron has helped launch over 350 websites for small businesses on up to Fortune 100 companies. In growing multiple agencies past the $2 million mark in founder and executive roles, Aaron has a strong sense of brand, team building, user experience, and the full digital life cycle a campaign and its assets must deliver. Joining Get 5 Stars in 2015, Aaron has led the marketing, sales, and product UX initiatives, helping the platform serve over 18,000 businesses globally and growing. The platform is a customer feedback and online review platform that helps brands and businesses listen, evaluate, and market their customers' experiences. Get 5 Stars automates the customer feedback process while capturing their net promoter scores and encouraging and monitoring online reviews. Outside of his direct client experience, Aaron is a frequent conference speaker nationally on a variety of online marketing topics. His in-depth experience with web design, mobile, SEO, local search, and online reviews has led him to speak at SMX events, SearchFest, Moz events, MN Search, Score, and many others. He helped launch Local University as a faculty partner, launched the MN Search organization as a founding board member, and has been an expert on the Local Search Ranking Factors report since 2010. When not online, Aaron is a husband and father to four kids. He can be found snowboarding, boating, watching college football, and the Minnesota Twins. Aaron, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me. And I just realized when you sum up 20 years of work, it gets a little lengthy. I think I need to figure out how to shorten that up.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be another podcast episode. Would be, you know, we'll pull in all of the branding and marketing and Minnesota references. My joke to Lee Oden, and we were all at a conference together, the Social Media Rockstar event earlier this week, and he was actually on the podcast last week. So we're kind of bookending that event in a smart, savvy way, I feel like. But my bad joke to Lee would be that we would need to optimize your bio. So it's got to get punny with optimization.
Absolutely.
So as the father of four kids, how in the hell do you find time to snowboard, boat, watch football, and the Minnesota Twins?
Well, some of those things end up working out really well once the kids start taking interest in it. My three oldest are daughters, 12 and 10 and 7, and they love to boat and tube and learning to water ski and those kind of things. And they love to ski, so dad can go out and snowboard while they're out skiing. And then the other ones, they're, you know, guilty pleasures. I have to sneak it in. Sometimes they're already in bed or reading for the night or whatever. And obviously lately I just get to watch my twins lose a lot. And now is the time of year where my wife starts saying every single night that there's football on tonight as well. So I find a way.
That is awesome. So tell me a bit about what Get 5 Stars does. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, well, Get 5 Stars was designed to be just a simple to implement customer feedback platform. What the co-founders noticed with the product, and in the last year and a half I've been involved with it, is that people really lacked a way to easily implement something that would ask every customer they were interacting with how they did in a proactive manner. So the easiest way to look at the service is you're customizing a feedback flow and different touch points with that, when questions that you ask that customer and find out how their experience was with you. And then once you've customized that flow in a matter of minutes or hours, depending upon what you want to set up and configure to match your brand, then you just need to dump in customers. And the most common use of that is dumping in email addresses. So instead of them just, you know, coming upon your site and maybe filling out a form or doing something in a reactive manner, our platform sends out an email and asks them how their last experience was with you. And based on if it was good or bad, it kind of takes them down a different path. If it was good, we're going to collect feedback and then ask that customer to review you on a site like Yelp or Google or Facebook or TripAdvisor. And if it's a bad experience, we collect as much information as we can and then alert that business owner or manager that they have an unhappy customer and they can take action and try to right the ship with them.
Boy, does this sound like a much needed piece of MarTech, because I was at the Social Media Rockstar event during my talk earlier in the day. I was kind of closed with that call to that horrifying stat that I share, that 76% of us marketers feel like we know what our customers want, but only 34% have bothered to ask. And that's a stunning thing to say, to leave the audience with, and it spooks everybody into something. It should be action, but I think a lot of times we don't know what to do. It's an easy one to nod along with and say, okay, Nick just scared the bejesus out of me. But what do we actually go do? How do we get better at that? How do we close up that loop? And it sounds like something like Get 5 Stars can, well, speaking of effective brand names, help you get 5 stars at doing just that.
Yeah, and that's really it. Behind our brand, not as much as in the tactical sense, right, where you want 5-star reviews, but more in the strategic sense of, can you get your business to be a 5-star service? And the best way to do that is to listen to your customers, find out what they love, what they think could be better, and then use that information to, you know, continually hone your business into the best business that it can be. And just as you cited, and I think I tweeted out earlier in the morning after your talk, Nick, like that was a great setup for my talk at the end of the day, right? You have this large chasm between you know, what customers expect and what they'd like to do and then what the business does. And there's a couple things that fall into it that for a business, right? One area is what I call the fear of none or one. And that's businesses who have no online reviews, and they really look at it as a Pandora's box. They don't want to do anything with it, because once they start getting them, then what are they going to do? And then what if they get a bad one? And then the fear of one is what happens, and I gave a couple examples of, is when you get an online review and it's a 1-star or a 2-star review and it's your only review and you have no idea what to do. You hope that it can get taken down for one reason or another, but you come to find out it can't. And then you really have to understand, I need to do something so this isn't the only representation of my business on a site like Yelp or Google or one of the other review sites.
So what is the answer there? I mean, I think that's, you know, it's very tactical, but that's extremely, it's very real. And as we talk about brand reputation online, you are what your review is. So what do you do with that horrifying 1-star?
Yeah, and the most simplest advice I give to people with that is you ask everyone. You can't let that be the only representation of your business. Now, tactically, let's say you get that one review, make sure you respond to it, right? All of the main review sites allow a business owner in one way or another to respond to that review. You should respond to it. You should own it. You should apologize, and you should outline a next step as, you know, how you're going to, you know, take it offline and figure out a way to try to remedy the situation with that customer. That way, the next people that come in, even if it ends up being your only review for a while, they at least see, hey, the business is listening, they care about the customer, and they're taking steps to resolve the situation. But for the business as a whole, what you can do is, you know, it's really like farming. can you plant seeds continually of, we care about customer feedback, we want customer feedback, we're going to ask you for feedback, and we're going to continually ask our customers. So, you know, if you look at it as a number game, over time, we're going to have more customers that are going to leave us reviews because we're asking dozens, hundreds, or thousands over the course of a year or years for that type of feedback and putting them through this kind of process.
You know, it's interesting because I think it all makes sense, but there's this huge chasm. And you talk to marketers about this. Why do we suck so bad at this? Everybody acknowledges how important it is that reviews are important. That's something that's kind of universally understood. And yet, your simple bit of advice on what you do, whether it's a one star or really starting with no stars, is to ask everyone. But it seems like so few are. Are we too nice? Do we? What is it about? What is it about, you know, getting those reviews that creates that gap?
Well, first of all, I'm going to thank you because I think you just gave me a like presentation idea titled "Why Do We Suck So Bad at This?" I think that's a fantastic in-your-face topic. You know, it really is a combination. And so let's first look at small businesses, right? Small business owners, where they're hard on their sleeve, they're passionate about what they do, it's their livelihood. There's a lot of emotion tied into it. And with that, criticism, even if it's great criticism and constructive, can be very hard to take, right? It can completely ruin a small business owner's day. And any of us that are passionate about anything, if that is criticized or somebody doesn't absolutely love it, we can all easily identify with what that feeling is. I know I've had it myself a million times when you don't meet the standards of someone. So it's really hard to evolve and understand, like, wow, I can take these pieces of information, decipher if there's some actual merit and truth to them, and try to do something about it. So criticism by human nature is very, very hard to take. And when you combine it, when you have your livelihood and earning and money and those kind of things involved in it, it makes it even harder. And let's face it, a small business owner wears a million hats, right? And even though customer service in person might be something that they're fantastic at, setting up a system or a process or one more thing to do that requires them to engage that way just might be far out of their reach. And then as you move along to larger, more sophisticated businesses, a lot of times it's just as simple as getting systems to talk to each other ends up being some of their problem, and continuing to have empathy for a customer one at a time. When you have 500 locations or 1,000 locations, you really get caught up in what's going on in mass and not so much on a micro level where each customer matters. So you can overlook simple things like this on asking and finding a way to measure it and then doing something about it.
You know, it almost makes me feel like you've kind of got this secondary role almost of being a business therapist too, because in some regards, you know, when you said criticism is hard, I mean, I see that with our own clients all the time. I mean, we acknowledge reviews are important, but boy, if something comes in that's not ideal. That's a very polite way of saying a bad review, not ideal. It can really get everybody's emotions running high. So, I mean, do you have a business therapist answer for, you know, take a deep breath and start to work on this, and how to not ruffle feathers? I mean, it's hard because in some ways the review business and understanding, unpacking, explaining, and helping with the review business, there's probably a lot of potential minds in there as well.
Yeah, so on one side, we do constant education on what involves, you know, responding to a negative review or even negative feedback, right? Because our system provides businesses with kind of two layers. First is initial feedback that's only to you, and you can decide what you want to do with that feedback. And then the second layer is when customers go and leave an online review. So with either of those and responding to that either way, you know, definitely pausing is one of the biggest things that we talk about. Pause and let the emotion wear off. if you need to put yourself in a timeout, put yourself in a timeout. You need to go for a walk, go for a walk. But definitely don't engage right away, because we're all built to be defensive right away. That's just the place where the majority of us are going to go. And then we've also considered this in our platform as well. So the feedback that comes in, you can privately respond to that customer. And when you write that response, we automatically put it in a queue with a timer on it. So you have, you know, 15 minutes to rethink it. And if you even you hit send on it, it goes through a timer and you can go back and grab it at any point in time. It's not going to go out yet. So we've built some small buffers in there as well to systematically deal with some of the things that are human nature for us to respond right away.
So tell me why you built that timer in there. I think I know why, but or maybe you don't. Maybe I'm overthinking that.
Well, it really comes down to, obviously, emotion subsides a little bit over time. And then, you know, I should mention as well, so it emails what you just wrote back to you. So now you have a chance to read it in your own inbox. And, you know, there's plenty of us who have all sent emails that when we read it or we see the person's response and then we read, you know, we reread, and it's hard because email can be, you know, so lacking in emotion and context sometimes that we're like, yeah, well, all right, I can see how they took it that way, or I can see how I came off sounding that way. So we hold it, we put it back in front of that person, and we give them an opportunity if they want to edit it, rescind it entirely or do something else with it. So that's really, really behind it, is to give them a good look at it, give them a reminder of what it looks like, allow them to, you know, read it, not just write it, and hopefully save them from, you know, making it, what might already be a bad situation, worse.
I love that. It kind of bakes in the rule that maybe, when your parents reminded you of, or an early boss one day, of just save that emotional email. That's why I was thinking when you described that feature that's why, because you always want to save that draft and then decide after the fact, do I really want to send that? And
there's another product idea right there, right? When you see X amount of emotional words in your email being composed, it'll just automatically hold it for you. That would be a fabulous filter for a number of people.
Oh my gosh, that's I mean, because you could probably do that, parse it for terse remarks or something that sets you off, and then you're kind of locked out of the ability to send something. Hilarious. So, you know, in thinking about, you know, all of these, it's interesting because it's kind of, you know, when you come from the social media rock star event where we just came from, what would you describe as the relationship between social media and review sites? Because they seem in the same ballpark, maybe, you know, cousins, very much related. It's offsite activity. It's funny because we seem to love social media a lot more, but sometimes review sites, again, automatically get people into that kind of defensive mode.
Yeah. So I often refer to reviews in this way in the line of social, because I've given a lot of talks on reviews at you know, social media themed events. Reviews are kind of, they're prehistoric social media interactions. Reviews in one way or another were some of the first ways that consumers got a voice and kind of, you know, layered things out on the internet. The other one I would put in there is like blog comments. I actually told the joke, I've followed Lee since day one, and us geographically being in the same area, we had some co-clients, and pre-Twitter days, you would, you know, comment on a blog post that Lee wrote, or if Lee comment or you commented on your post, and then you just sit there and hit refresh waiting for them to comment back to you. So that's another prehistoric form of social media. But reviews allowed somebody to, you know, create a voice and have something to say about a business and put their opinion out there. And then we see now how it even carries over. So you have, you know, what I would call these static review sites, where you write the review and a rating and it stays there and it's part of that business's profile on Facebook or Yelp or Google. But then you also have, you know, really in-stream reviews that go on all the time, right? If you're in your Facebook feed, somebody will be saying like, hey, I need a plumber. Do you know anybody? And four or five people will respond with, hey, call these guys. They're really great. They showed up fast. They just fixed this sink for us last week. Or my air conditioning's out. Do you know somebody? Yeah, here's who I'd go to. Hey, my brother does it. Give him a call. So you have these like live review sessions going on all the time in your Twitter and Facebook streams, where people are either asking for help, or maybe you're at that business and you maybe write a review, or you also maybe are posting photos and saying, wow, this place is great. I really love it here. You know, anyone would be better by shopping here or buying here or doing service with this company. So there's really just a number of angles where it's the consumer's voice, and they have just all of these fabulous channels to share what their experience is. And to kind of tie it up in a little package, if your customers are doing all of these things and you're not doing anything about it to help control it or foster it, or, you know, really amplifying the ones that are doing a good job telling your story, well, then you're falling short. The great things you're doing are a secret, and that's bad marketing.
You know, that's a really great way to say that, because that's, you know, ties into both reviews, but also just kind of business philosophy. Because so often we kind of use, when you said earlier, we can't let that be the only representation of our business. And yet so many of us, whether it's a review or some negative story, we wait until that stuff happens to us instead of amplifying the awesome stories, the awesome reviews, all of those great things that, you know, if you look at it as, you know, kind of building up a campfire for your business, you have so many great embers there that you could take advantage of that too often we're just not doing anything with.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the kind of main three takeaways that I tried to leave people with, and the one that I really see resonate a lot of times when I talk about this stuff in a presentation format or whatever else, is just the fact of referring to your customers, their story is your story. So if you think about that in an online review, in testimonials on your website, in case studies that you build, if you're not doing a good job of giving them ways to tell their story or amplifying their story, or, you know, helping format it or put it together in the right way with the right assets and the right media forms, like, you're falling short. You're not telling your story well enough, because at the end of the day, the customer and their experience really is the thing that's going to win out for differentiating you in the marketplace, no matter what you're selling.
So in thinking about the review marketplace, you know, and kind of the relative relationships I kind of implied with being in the same family, then you look at the massive online juggernaut that is Facebook. And you see them getting more and more involved in reviews and even redesigning brand pages so those reviews are more prominent. Describe the role that you see Facebook playing now, and will that grow? Will that evolve? How will that change the review ecosystem?
Yeah, great question, Nick. And it really is something that I think people should pay attention to. As we've seen with all of the behemoths in the internet space, like, local is the holy grail for a number of them. And we've seen Facebook put a lot more into, you know, business profiles and now reviews and things like that, really chasing after those areas. So I absolutely think we're going to continue to see more and more. Personally, I refer to Facebook as Internet B, right? It's this whole other part of the internet that some people never even leave, because the people they're connected to are there and who they trust is there. And it's that made easy for everyone to share photos in mass and share emotions and like and dislike and now wow and sad and mad and all the other flavors that you can give to what people share. So it's extremely important. Now, specific to reviews, we've seen just a large increase, right? Because everyone has a Facebook account. They're logged in. When you look at you know, if you consider your customer base at your business, you likely, depending upon where you're located in the country, you may only have like 1 or 2% of your customers that actually have a Yelp account and actually write Yelp reviews, where you probably have 80% of your customers are on Facebook and have an account there and have the app on their phone. So getting them to write those reviews is much, much easier. And then I also think, too, because of the way Facebook is built, a lot of people writing those reviews, they really think, when I'm publishing content on Facebook, it's just to the people I know anyway. So they don't even realize where they have the same fears with like a Google or Yelp, where they're like, well, I don't want to write something that the whole world sees. They don't realize, yep, you're actually writing something that the whole world sees when they go in and look at this business's profile. So those things all kind of coupled have really led to the uptake in reviews on the side for Facebook. Now, one of the downfalls is Facebook is the worst right now at patrolling what are these credible reviews, right? When you look at Yelp actually cares about, do you have an account and do you have friends and do you check in at businesses and whatever else, they're going to vet you as the reviewer, as the customer, before they just start publishing your reviews anywhere. Facebook does none of that. And we see a lot of, you know, review spam and things like that that go on with Facebook. But the huge pro that they have going for them, and this is the direction I think they're trying to get to, is they're going to have the ability not just to serve you up reviews. So, hey, here's, you know, this business, here's Bob's Plumbing, and here's all the reviews for it. But it's going to allow you to say, yeah, Bob's Plumbing has 100 reviews, but guess what? 8 of them are from people you know. So here's what the people you know and trust have to say about Bob's Plumbing. And to me, those, that connection point and understanding those relationships, and they're going to introduce, you know, trust into a certain population of the reviews that are out there, like that can be a huge win in the review space for Facebook.
Yeah, I love the idea of Internet B, and that's a really interesting concept to think of, because it is this ecosystem. It's the content that we explore is what someone shared on Facebook. The people we know are who we talk to on Facebook. So it really, as they pull in more things, whether it's something like reviews, it almost seems like, you know, they're looking at what would someone possibly go elsewhere for, and then they seek to embed it in the network.
Yeah, and to me, it almost like makes my brain explode a little bit, because to me, it's almost in a sense we're reverting back to the start of the internet, right? If you consider like the world that like AOL tried to create and things like that, where you just lived inside of AOL and AOL chat rooms and all these other kinds of things, where, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait, there's way more to the web than just AOL and these things. And AOL is trying to control like, hey, we'll get you online and we provide everything online and we have news and we have chat room, you know, we have all these things. And now, you know, here we are coming back around to something where it's like, hey, you know, here's some closed areas and get familiar and happy and get everything you want from the people you know and the sources you trust and what you like and everything else. And to me, it just exposes a lot of things in human behavior where it's like, yeah, we like things to be wide open, but at the end of the day, we're most comfortable with who we know, what we trust, and being able to self-select some of the things that we're able to do. And those things kind of all competing and where those things head to and how things evolve is, yeah, it's fascinating.
So what else should the local marketer who cares about their online reputation beyond every, I was going to say, what should they think of that they're not? But I would venture a guess that most of what you're working on is what they aren't thinking of or thinking of as much. But what's totally off people's radar that needs to nudge its way in?
I guess take one thing off topic from reviews is I think just understanding, and most people understand how important Google is to them, but they really only think of Google as search results. And I think there's a number of things happening at Google where the way one of my colleagues, Mike Blumenthal, refers to it is, you know, Google's really trying to be the presentation layer of the web. If you look behind all the data that they gather and some of the new features they're rolling out from AMP mobile pages, right? They want to host all of those things mobily and have it themselves. And then for small businesses, it's super important that you complete your Google My Business profile. And Google's kind of local epicenter of creating a profile for your business has had 6 different names over the last 10 years and is, you know, always going through this product cycle. But at the end of the day, it's the best thing a business can do to say, here's where I am accurately located. Here's my hours. Here's photos of my business. Here's the categories I fall into and what I do. And it still is amazing to me the amount of businesses that haven't, you know, claimed that profile and added every last of information they can. Because to Google, that's really, really trusted information. And as they continue to evolve, they're just really looking at like, hey, business, supply us the data, right? So one extreme thought is to envision where Google's like, we don't care that you have a website. We're going to know everything we need to know about you by what you've told us and other trusted sources that we have. So we really don't need to pass a user onto your website. We can answer all the questions right here with everything that we've scraped and understood and had an intake with. So that would be one area where I'd tell people, like, you know, really consider the business profile sites that are out there, Google My Business, your Yelp account, no matter what type of business you are, complete those profiles, because most of these sites are presenting it and getting a lot more traffic than your own website.
That is so true. You know, it's funny, we talk here about branding and very great advice, but I never had thought, but it's so true about the kind of troubled product brand that Google has had around, you know, what is now Google My Business. But yeah, it's, I mean, because that would be, I'm trying to remember everything else. It was Places, right?
Wasn't yep, it? Places. And then obviously they coupled everything in-house to Google Plus.
Google
so then
Plus.
It was Google Plus local.
Yeah.
And then they uncoupled it again. So, you know, it's just, believe me, we're those of us who, you know, are in the local space and whatever else, it's like it's just the running joke. Like whatever they're going to call it in 6 months from now.
Yeah, go do that thing.
Yep. And they usually do a terrible job of rolling it out and explaining it and everything else. And it's, I don't know, it's definitely a frustrating thing. But then it opens up opportunities for, we do a lot of events where we're dealing with small business owners and helping them understand these simple, you know, building blocks that they really need to get exposure online. It's some of their best opportunities to get exposure.
That is so true. And it's, I think that another way to say it is only Google could suck that bad at branding.
Yeah, and still make it work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They have the world's largest sandbox. They eventually kind of figure out a few things, and then at the end of it, they're like, well, it's working for all these other billions of searches, so some of these other things that don't work all right, it's like, well, okay, the other billions are fine, so we'll be fine with these millions just not working out so well.
Oh, I love it. I love it. As we start to wrap up here, Aaron, what is a brand that has made you smile? Obviously, Google has made us both smile, but a good smile. Anybody out there producing a grin on your side?
Yeah, absolutely. I was. I'm just getting close to writing an article where I point out three brands that I've recently worked with or come across that had just a really great customer experience. And one of them, just on my personal side, we did a kitchen remodel last year. And in our Center Island, we used a product called Cambria. And Cambria is a really nice countertop that we decided to do with our Center Island. With having four kids, we wanted the most bulletproof, scratch resistant, marker resistant, melt resistant, whatever else was going to be thrown at it, right? So we made the investment. It's a very nice product and everything else, but their process, very meticulous, right? When the person came out and measured the center island for the top and did everything, it was a, you know, exact schedule. Communication was great. And as we all know in the contracting industry, sometimes that can be completely null and void.
Yeah.
So just by doing the basics, they're already having a great experience. But after the countertop was in and we moved back into our kitchen, a couple weeks later, the UPS guy shows up, hands me a package, and the thing weighs a ton, right? Felt like it was a 10-pound package, and I was super confused. Like, all right, I order plenty of things online, but nothing that has this weight to it. And I opened it up, and it was from Cambria. And what it was this great package, and it was probably a 1-foot by 1-foot cheese cutting board that was made out of the same material that our countertop was. And it was a gift from Cambria just saying, thanks for using our product. Here's a custom cutting board that matches your countertop. It had a thank you card in there. And then it also prompted me to, you know, go and leave us feedback telling us about your experience. And here's where you can go and do that. And I was completely blown away by it. I was like, here's an extra step. Here's money out of their pocket.
Right.
Here's something completely personalized to the product that I bought. And, you know, the marketer in me and working with feedback, I was like, this is a beautiful way. Who's not going to leave feedback when you're just like, wow, thank you. This gift has a $50 value to me or $100 value to me. And I will happily leave you feedback. And guess what I'm going to do? I'm probably going to rave about you because you've already impressed me. And now you just went completely over the top. So that to me was just something where I was like, wow, that's awesome. So I want to write about that one. And I have a couple others where I think people just do a really great job of understanding customer touch points and how to make the most out of those touch points.
That is a great story as I go to Google Cambria countertops for my million kids right now also.
They're not cheap, but holy cow, they're a tank. They'll last for life. And that's where we looked at. We're like, all right, if we did something less, we might have to replace this in a few years with the wear and tear it gets at our house. So we went all out.
That is awesome. Aaron, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yes, if you don't have better time to waste on the internet, I would love to have you visit any of the places where I share my thoughts. My own site, so aaronwyke.com, I blog at least once a month on there and share insight into small business marketing and digital things. On the Get 5 Stars site, our blog there, we post multiple times a week and we talk a ton about, you know, customer service and complaints and online reviews and all of those pieces. We really are heavily into educating our customers. And then if you get a chance, I'm part of a speaking series called Local University. So if you go to localu.org, we do about 6 events a year. It's actually sponsored by Google. They're very good sponsors because they realize we help educate people on how to use some of their products and how search engines work and SEO, especially on a local and maps basis. So localu.org has events listed. I'll be in Austin, Texas in October and New Orleans, and that'd be a great way to hear what I have to say in person and also meet up as well. So those are 3 easy ways to keep on top of what I'm up to.
Awesome. And we should, as you point people to find you, to Google you, with your last name, and speaking as someone with a last name and a different spelling myself, I will go ahead and say, for those that are listening, this is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Weicke, W-E-I-C-H-E. So we will also link up to all of that in our show notes for those that are challenged when it comes to spelling. Aaron, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Nick, it was fabulous. Thank you so much for having me.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community, and I am going to give a double shout out this week because we gave a shout last week to Sarah Kuglin and the folks that put on the social media Rockstar event. We had Lee on last week. We've got Aaron on this week. Want to kind of bookend that with a great big shout out to our friends in Western Minnesota. Thank you for having us. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you like have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Finally, On Brand is also brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd, this very week that you're listening to this, in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, and Ginny Dietrich in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.